Good evening, Kansas City. I'm Brian Nolan. You're listening to Radioactive Magazine. Tonight, we're with guest Richard Eicher, one of the leaders in Kansas City's Stand Up Kansas City, which is the organization fighting for $15 and a union, not just in Kansas City, but throughout our country. Richard, thank you for being here this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. So we're here to talk about November 10th in particular. We'll get to that topic in a little bit, but I wanted to get to a little bit more information about you, if we could. What is Stand Up Kansas City?
Well, Stand Up Kansas City is a workers' movement fighting for $15 an hour and union recognition.
How long have you been a part of Stand Up KC?
For almost 2 years now.
Almost 2 years? Okay, what encouraged you to get involved and to take such a prominent leadership role in the movement?
I first became aware of the movement about 2 years ago when they held a strike in front of my restaurant that I work at.
Okay.
I was intrigued. I spoke with my fellow workers. I became involved in the movement, and my role has grown since then.
Now, one of the things that's always impressed me about what I know about Stand Up KC is that the leaders like you are the actual workers who are fighting for 15 in a union. It's not just fast food workers anymore, though. That's sort of how it started, but we're talking about a lot more. Who else has joined the fight since you came involved?
Well, home health care workers, child care workers, adjunct professors. We have convenience store workers, gas station workers, Family Dollar workers. These are a lot of just basically janitorial workers, house cleaning workers.
So my understanding about Stand Up KC is that the philosophy basically is no one who works should have to live in poverty in the United States of America. And for you, you've lived this sort of on the day-to-day. You know, we were talking a little bit about this before that, it's not as simple to just find another job. Is that right?
That's right.
And how long have you been employed in fast food?
I've been employed for almost 25 years.
25 years. That's incredible. Now, you recently went to Ireland. Is that right?
That's right.
What can you tell us about that trip?
Well, we were invited over there to speak with fellow fast food workers in Ireland. Because these corporations to which we are asking for a union are international corporations. So we went to speak with our workers there. We met with their Secretary of Labor. We met with members of their parliament. We met with we had a meeting with their president of Ireland.
So you met the president of Ireland?
I met the president of Ireland.
So I think that speaks largely to the fact that this movement that started, in the small parts of big cities throughout this country has sort of taken on this almost international flavor. You're in Ireland. I know some of your other workers, I believe, have been to Brazil, other parts of the world. In fact, one of the workers who's oftentimes one of the poster people for this movement, Terrence Wise, who's based here out of Kansas City, he recently had the opportunity to speak to someone pretty important. Do you remember who that was?
It was the President, yeah. Barack Obama.
So that to me speaks largely to, I think, something even more important, and that's that this doesn't just start with the fast food workers, with the home health care workers, with the students, all the people who have joined. There are prominent national figures in the United States of America that are participating in this, including the president. And my understanding is even Hillary Clinton's come out in strong support of 15 in the union, a lot of other national figures. I'd like to talk a little bit more about you, though. If you don't mind talking about this, what are you earning right? What are you earning right now?
Well, I'm earning about $11.17 an hour.
Okay. Is that a little bit higher than what some of the other fast food workers are making?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And do you find it difficult to live off of 11?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And I guess maybe broader or more importantly, how many hours do you have to work each week typically?
I work for about a full 40.
Full 40. Okay. So let's get into November 10th. There's something special happening on November the 10th. It's a national day of action, but in Kansas City, Stand Up Kansas City is doing a few special things. What can you tell us about November the 10th?
Well, November 10th is a national day of action. Here in Kansas City, we're having a rally at downtown at Barney Alice Plaza at 5 o'clock. But we're going to be doing an all-day thing for us. not just here in Kansas City, but it's going to be nationwide. Some over 200, some close to 200 cities are going to be involved in this. Basically, we're just going to come out, show our numbers, show our organization. You know, and this is set like 1 year before the election. So we're just showing people, we're just showing what democracy looks like and that numbers, you know, that's what democracy is. That's what we're really doing.
I've been to your rallies. That's often one of the things that I hear chanted.
Yeah.
Show me what democracy looks like.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like. Mm-hmm. How many people do you typically have, workers, fast food workers, home health care workers, allies that are coming out to these rallies?
On April 15th, we had close to, I think, 1,500 people out. And we are hoping to get at least 1,000 for this one.
Yeah, you know, I think people have been becoming a little more critical. This movement's been going on for a few years now. You said you've been involved for 2. I think we're going on, you know, closer to 3 now, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. since the inception of this.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the common criticisms that's leveled against the movement is you don't have anything to show for it. You don't have 15 right now. You don't have a union. What's the response to that?
Well, you have to look at it at a big picture. I mean, nationwide, I mean, there's cities like Los Angeles, Seattle, New York City or New York State have all raised the minimum wage. And like Seattle and Los Angeles, they're going to raise theirs to 15 eventually. So we are having an impact on a local level nationwide, city by city, state by state. We'd like to see movement on a wholesale national level if we can. But right now, we right here in Kansas City, we got $13 an hour ordinance passed. And, you know, city would not have considered that if it hadn't been for the 4 or 5 times we've been on strike in this city, that we sat down and blocked a road and got arrested, or that we were in front of City Hall fasting. You know, we have made an impact, and we're continuing to make an impact.
How long did the fast last?
Last lasted, I think, for a week. People
so,
fast.
You know, this is something I know Terrence Wise speaks about this often. I've heard other workers talk about this. I think it's one of the more sad realities. You know, Henry Ford, when he's starting this auto company, he says he wants to create a workforce that makes enough money that they can buy his own cars. You know, a car, even back then, was an expensive luxury item.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a country now where you can work, like you, Richard, 40 mm-hmm. hours a week, but you're stuck in a reality where sometimes it's difficult to afford the food that you're making.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's I've heard Terrence talk about multiple times, is that he can work a full day, but he can't often afford to eat himself because he's got other mouths to feed. He's got daughters. He's got family and children. You know, to me, that speaks to the profound and screwed up reality of how we're dealing with workers. And you were talking before the show a little bit about this. You said 42%, I believe it was.
42% of American workers make $10 an hour or less. That's like 64 million workers.
You know, it's just, it's crazy because the expectation, and you hear this oftentimes, is get a better job, go back to school. And you and I were talking a little bit about that. I mean, what do you say to people who say, well, it's your fault that you're making too little to live on. Why don't you go back to school?
Well, even now we hear how school itself is no guarantee that, you know, that you can get a better job
sure.
these days. And that this fight about student debt being so enormous. I mean, I could go to school, get the skills I need, but then I could end up with student debt and still be back at McDonald's working again.
Right. A college education effectively is not a guarantee for more gainful employment in an economy like ours where effectively a few corporations have more power to create more jobs. I mean, I remember the number being since the start of the Great Recession, 44% of all of the new jobs created in our economy are low-wage jobs. Now, so in addition to the 40% or 42% that you talked about who are already living off of or making less than $15 an hour, we've got a situation where all the new jobs that are being created, or almost a majority of the new jobs being created, you're making less and less. This has led to a special problem where $7 billion every year is the estimate of low-wage workers who have to resort to government subsidies on Medicare, on other tax credits, because they're not making enough. And yet, you've got CEOs at McDonald's, for instance, who are making over $9,200 per hour. know, it's insane.
It is insane. I mean, one of the issues that I make at point out, people are worrying about the prices of burgers going up and anyone having to pay for that. But in a way, what you said, people are already paying for it. They're paying for it with food stamps and with affordable housing and assisted housing and with for Medicare. The taxpayers are already paying for this. What we want is we want the corporations there or employers to take up the share and not let the state. Because right now we're in the middle of a big debate here. But who is responsible for the worker? The corporations have cut back on wages, cut back on employment, and have basically said it is the state's responsibility to feed and house the worker. Well, we see some cases now of some states pushing back on that, cutting back on their benefits and stuff like that. And we have once again gone back to our employers and says, as an employer, it's your responsibility to ensure that we want enough that I can afford housing, that I can afford food, without relying on government subsidies to cover the bill.
It seems to me there's something special about the United States of America, and I say special in sort of a bad sense, because other developed countries that are our economic competitors seem to have it figured out. Their workers are making a lot more than minimum wage hourly, and the price of the burger doesn't seem to be going up too much. Can you talk a little bit to some of the other countries that you've been to or that you've spent time discussing, and what do they do differently?
Well, the example is Denmark is a good example. They have a union in Denmark where the workers make about $20 an hour there, you know, including like 2 weeks of paid vacation as well. So, I mean, and then their burgers are only like 60 cents more. But there are other countries, I don't know what the price of their burgers are, but I know that Australia, New Zealand, you know, the countries there where the workers make more.
I just want to repeat that. Yeah. In some countries like Denmark, they're making over $20 an hour in the fast food industry, and the price of the burger has only gone up.
The price of the Big Mac is 60 cents more.
I just don't understand, and maybe you can explain it to me. Why are we so afraid of collective action of workers in the United States? Why is having a union such a problem for so many people?
Well, for the last, you know, 20 or 30 years, the unions have begun to get a bad rep in the press, in the minds of the public. And they have diminished greatly. Union membership in this country is at max with both public and private sectors is 11%. Means about one worker out of every 10 is a member of a union in this country. So, I mean, in our country of Missouri, here in Missouri, it's like 7.6%. And in Kansas, it's like 7.2%. So, I mean, you realize when you look at something like that right to work law, it's like, what are they talking about? There aren't hardly any union jobs left in Missouri. So how would that's a law that would only just serve to wipe them out completely.
Well, it seems to me to speak to something about the balance of power, that in our situation, we have people who are making $9,200 an hour, and so clearly they have a vested interest, these CEOs of bigger corporations like McDonald's, Burger King, Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, the Kentucky Huts of the world. I mean, these guys are making over $9,200 an hour. They clearly have a vested interest in making sure that unions don't increase their strength so that they can keep lining their own pockets to make more and more money. But it's just, I always go back to that figure, $7 billion a year we're spending on subsidizing fast food workers at the cost of corporate profits.
Well, if you look back, historically speaking, it was the unions through organization and through strikes were able to win higher wages. They were able to win benefits through their strength in numbers and through their organization. The unions were the ones who really began to move this country forward and begin to lift up and create what we call a middle class through their actions.
That's a really good point. I think people think with unions or with fighting for a union, with a union fighting for higher wages, a better collective bargaining agreement, that it's something that's handed to them, that's a handout. You just brought up a good point, though. It's not something that's given. It's something that's earned. It's something that's won through collective action. I mean, since you've been working with Stand Up KC as a leader here for the last two or more years, how many hours a week do you think you're spending organizing and fighting for this union, for this movement? Because I imagine it's not insignificant.
well, it's almost like another full-time job in many ways.
So, in other words, you're not asking for a handout.
No.
You're fighting for something that's more important.
Mm-hmm. So,
let's get into something you brought up earlier. You're talking about the examples of some of the victories that have been won. We have Seattle. It started with the SeaTac Airport. We've got L.A. We've got San Francisco, other major cities across the country who are increasing their minimum wages. I do want to point out, though, you won a minimum wage increase in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's been repealed, that, in my book, is a huge victory. But let's talk a little bit about the fallout of that. Okay, you won it, but it's been repealed. What's been the reaction to that with some of your brothers and sisters in arms here with Stand Up KC?
Well, there's been some disappointment, but I would not say discouragement, just disappointment. When we've got into this, we knew this would be a long battle. We knew that they would hit back. I knew there would be setbacks. I mean, historically, you look back through the history of the labor movement, it never was easy. Never was easy for them to win higher wages or to win what we would consider how much of a struggle it took them just to get an 8-hour day.
When's the last time you saw a pay increase?
About 3 months ago, I got a pay increase of 7 cents.
7 cents? How common is that?
Oh, that's typical. Speaking with some of my fellow workers at my store, some of them got 4 cents, some got 6 cents. You know, these kind of pay increases are usually typical.
Is that pay increase closing the gap? Are you able to pay your bills now?
No, it's not.
So let's talk a little bit about what you've done in the past. You brought this up earlier, and I wanted to get a little more into it. A few months ago, you did something that I thought was interesting and bold. You were arrested for 15 in the union. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, civil disobedience has always been an historic part of any kind of movement. We looked for inspiration. We looked at the civil rights movement, for example, and the other movements that have used, you know, civil disobedience. We thought it was time to take it to another step. So we decided we had volunteers. We had training. And so we sat down on ramp and blocked a highway on ramp, and the cops came and took us away. There's over 53 workers were arrested that day.
And I was there. I remember this. And one of the coolest things I thought that happened was as workers were peacefully assembling and being arrested, exercising their civil disobedience in this instance in front of a McDonald's near Prospect, mm-hmm. There were some people that were singing famous gospel hymns, famous labor hymns. It was a profoundly beautiful moment in the history of Kansas City that I wish more people had been there to see or record. But that speaks to something that I think is important about Stand Up KC here in Missouri that might be a little unique. You all make culture a big part of what you're doing. And for example, I know there's the Langston Hughes Club. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Langston Hughes Club is a Langston Hughes was a person who documented. He was an artist and photographer and poet. You know, and this basically Langston Hughes is a collection of individuals who have taken their free time to. It's really an art club. We have people who write poetry, people who take photographs. You know, these sorts of things. It's basically a cultural thing where we try to use art to express our struggles in life.
Bill Clinton's former Secretary of Labor, Robert Reich, was recently in Kansas City promoting his new book. And one of the things that he wrote in that book really moved me because, sadly, I've just never thought about it. And you know, what he said is that when people are struggling to make ends meet, when they're going from day to day, unable to do anything but basically work and sleep, like so many of the workers in Stand Up KC, they don't have time to be creative, to enjoy the arts, to see this entire other side of their lives. And I think that's something that Stand Up KC brings to a lot of workers, is this other aspect, this artistic side of everything. It's incredible. I was really thrilled to hear about that.
Well, we had an art show a few months ago.
That's right.
Where we actually had someone was a photojournalist. I can't remember his
name. From the New York Times?
From the New York Times, who gave cameras to workers and asked them to simply document, you know, they took pictures of where they worked, they took pictures of where they lived, pictures of their neighborhoods, so people could see firsthand the poverty that we live with every day and experience every day.
Now, I remember one of the pictures stuck out to me in particular. I went to the exhibit. It was basically an empty milk bottle sitting inside of a refrigerator whose light was burnt out with nothing else inside of it. And that spoke, I think, directly to the problem. It's that you can work a full day. You're not there enough that you need the light bulb, and you can't afford it anyway for the fridge. But even if you had the light bulb, it wouldn't matter because you can't afford the food. I think people forget that. That this isn't about give me people looking for a handout. This is about workers who aren't teenagers, who aren't people right out of school. You said you've been in the fast food industry for 25 years. You show up on time, you do your job, and you do it well. What's your response to that criticism, that this is about teenagers looking for a handout?
Well, you know, for one thing, it's just, I look at it as teenagers for a handout. I mean, you can't have teenagers close the store at 2 o'clock in the morning. You can't have teenagers be there to open up the store at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning to open the store. I mean, there has to be grown-ups, there has to be adults working there. If we only had teenagers working there, our store would be open up from 4 o'clock to about 9 o'clock every day, and that would be it, but all the time we'd be open. So you look at it and see that, yeah, what teenagers are part of our workforce. They're usually only part-time workers. The vast majority of two-thirds of the workers at McDonald's are age of 28 or over. I mean, many of them are single mothers.
Yeah, I know the Washington Post recently said that over two-thirds were single mothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that statistic alarmed me, because if we're not going to increase wages, if we're not going to do anything more for single moms, we're effectively dooming the next generation to have the same problem.
Yeah, I looked at it. There was an editorial. There was a snippet in the USA Today business section a few months ago where it said that a single mother would have to work 60 hours a week to lift herself out of poverty. And if you're working with your mother, single parent working 60 hours a week, where do you have time for it to spend with your kid?
All right. I mean, it's a poor upbringing, mm-hmm. that yields.
Yeah.
In both senses, in the sense of quality of life, to be there with and see your children grow up, to impart your knowledge and your ethics on that child, and I think more importantly, to basically make ends meet for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's another example.
Terrence Wise is the leader. He spoke to me before. Sometimes he may have said something to me once that reminded me of the struggles of some of the earlier workers. Is that some days he gets up and his daughters are asleep. Four little girls. And when he gets back home, they're in bed. And so he was the whole day, and he never gets a chance to see them because he's working all day.
And to listen to Terrence and a lot of the other workers, I mean, these stories, they just move you to tears. I mean, he and his, I think, fiance or wife and four children, they were homeless for a little while. I mean, there was a decrease in hours at work. Because, you know, you said you work around 40 hours a week, but I think a lot of the workers are in a situation where they don't know when they're going to work. They don't know their schedule. Oftentimes, it's far less than 40 hours a week. And so they're at the whim of basically whoever's scheduling them to work that day. I think that's a difficult day-to-day existence for these folks. This is a multiracial movement. One of the things that's impressed me the most about it is it might literally be one of the most racially diverse and inclusive movements, not just in Kansas City, but perhaps that the country has ever seen. You're working with a few new groups, it sounds like. You're doing a lot more now. Can you talk about some of the new things that we're going to see on November 10th?
Well, one of the big issues for us now is immigration reform. You know, even at my store I work at, we have a large percentage of Hispanic workers working for us. And we, you know, and there's another, and these are issues, you know, we're also making an issue, too, of a part of our movements associated with Black Lives Matter. A delegation from Stand Up KC, for example, went over to Ferguson, Missouri during the incident involving Michael Brown. So it's it's almost like you look at it as a poverty movement. You know, we're all in this together, all low-wage workers, whether black or brown, we're all in this together, and it's all multi-ethnic. you know, 42% of American workers making $10 an hour or less, that is 64 million workers, and that is all of that is a large number, and that is error of every group imaginable. And so we want to see all of them treated fairly. They're fighting for racial equality and both for all races.
Well, poverty and poverty wages are
universal
and colorblind.
Colorblind.
Yeah.
There was a quote from a labor organizer named Swinson, I think he was, popular in the 19th century, where he said the only real, the only difference to be made is between the only distinction should be between the robber and the robbed. You know, that's the thing. Between the robber and the robbed is that, you know, labor can't make a distinction without destroying the walls of its defense, and capital doesn't make any distinction.
Richard, I cannot thank you enough for being here today. We've discussed Stand Up KC, the fight for 15 in the union, and the mass rally in March is going to be taking place, you told me, on November the 10th, I believe, at 5 p.m. at Barney Alice Plaza. My friend Craig Lubo is going to discuss real briefly some of the upcoming events for Radioactive Magazine and on KKFI. Craig, you want to take it away?
Thank you, Brian. We have, it's actually a calendar item that we have coming up Saturday, November 7th, in Topeka. The Kansas Coalition Against the Death Penalty is having their annual conference. There will be two keynote speakers. One will be Senator Koash from Nebraska. He was one that I interviewed on Jaws of Justice last week. And the second one is the National Director of the National Coalition Against the Death Penalty. It starts at 1 o'clock, goes from 1 to 4 p.m. And it's being held at the First Baptist Church in Topeka, and that's at 3300 block of McVicker. And coming up, we have some announcements here. Check the headphones, make sure it's coming through.